Let us say hello to David Krell, journalist, author, commentator, whose latest book is 1962, Baseball and America in the Time of JFK. David, how are you?
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
I'm hanging in there, David. Now, if people didn't hear our previous discussion or they're not familiar with your book, what's it all about? What do you focus on in this book?
Well, I focus on the baseball season, the Mets and the Colt 45s, later the Astros were the expansion teams that year, but also JFK, NASA, great year for movies, great year for literature. We spoke a couple of months ago about that and the inspiration that Kennedy put forth and just the aura of possibility, of optimism. And that, as you know and you talk about, is sorely lacking today.
That is for sure. Now, a couple of weeks ago, the Mets were not playing well, and there was all sorts of a hullabaloo, including, you know, I mentioned it on this show, about Mets players, including second baseman Javier Baez, booing the fans, turning their thumbs down to the fans in response to the boos of the fans. Give us an idea, how unusual is this within a historical perspective as far as the New York Metropolitans go?
Well, you know, the Mets, as you know, in the early 60s were referred to as lovable losers. Fans can boo and they can jeer. I don't really like it when you do it to your home team, but people do it. Ted Williams spit on the ground because the fans got on him. And Ted Williams is regarded as one of the greatest players who ever lived. But what I saw a couple of weeks ago, you lose maybe a third of your games if you're a really good team. And many managers have said you're going to win 54, lose 54. It's what happens in the other 54 that counts. You're not going to win every game. So are you going to boo every time someone strikes out or someone hits a home run off your pitcher? I think it gets to a point where people are so disappointed at the outcome, but not applauding the effort.
So have we ever seen a player do this before?
As far as the Mets go? I'm not aware, except for the Williams incident, I'm not aware of any.
So no Mets done this, as far as you're aware?
No. I mean, they might get on the fans during a press conference or, after the game, they talk to, they talk to the press and they might have said a word or two that maybe they want to take back. But I'm not aware of any thumbs down or anything like that.
Yeah, no, neither am I. Again, I'm not a historian like you are, but it certainly is interesting. Now, it looks like somehow within the last 10 to 15 days, the Mets learned how to play baseball again because they were playing atrociously and everybody had pretty much written them off. Now it's not inconceivable to see them be contenders again, and especially after this series where they beat the New York Yankees. Are you seeing any historical comparisons between this Mets team and other sort of miracle Mets teams, maybe 1973 or other similar teams that might have had some adversity and then overcome it?
Well, there's certainly an excitement because of Mr. Cohen. Steve Cohen is a fan. He did not look at this as an investment. He is really passionate about baseball. He has an active Twitter account. I don't think the Wilpons were active on social media. And when Cohen bought the team, and certainly in the beginning of the year, there was a definite excitement that I haven't seen in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Among Mets fans, especially on social media. I don't know if we're talking a Miracle Mets type of comeback or anything like that, but you certainly see the seeds of maybe aligning with 1984. You see the seeds of greatness emerging, and maybe next year or the year after, we could truly be contenders.
Let's hope so.
In 84, Gooden was a rookie and Strawberry was emerging as a real force. So 84, they got noticed. And we were in the wilderness after Tom Seaver got traded to the Reds. 78 to 83, you really had to suffer. You really had to be a loyal fan to stick with the team. And then 84, 85, they got Gary Carter. And then 86, they won the World Series.
Let's see where we are in that chronology this time around. I did notice, and I guess this is a result of Steve Cohen being somewhat responsive to the fans' needs. When I tuned into the game on Friday, I noticed the Mets were wearing their old black jerseys rather than the conventional blue and orange, which they've been wearing for these last few years. What brought that about? Do we know?
I have no idea how this black jersey thing got started. My suspicion is that it's a way to sell more merchandise.
Oh, yeah.
The other teams do it, and black is a very tough color. The toughest team in football historically has been the Raiders. Go back to the 70s with Al Davis and his motto, "Just Win, Baby." So it's supposed to be a fierce color, I've heard, and I think it's just to market the team better.
Well, it certainly makes sense if that's the case. All right. This weekend also saw the beginning of the NFL season a couple of days ago. President Biden gives this speech announcing all sorts of new vaccine requirements, not just for federal workers, but mandates for businesses that have 100 or more employees. I would think this includes every NFL team. What does the vaccine mandate do to the NFL, if anything?
Oh, gosh. We are in a very dangerous crossroads. Are you going to enforce that every single fan wears a mask indoors? I know a couple of teams have that in place. Las Vegas is one of them, the Las Vegas Raiders. But I don't know how this is going to be enforced when you have sporting events. I mean, you have 50,000 people in a stadium, sometimes more. Are you going to have security go around and police 50,000 people? Are you going to have the facial recognition software identify who's wearing a mask and who's not?
I mean, I don't see how that can work on a practical level.
I don't either. And this, you say speech. I saw it as a scolding. And there's an impracticality to this. Look, if people don't want to get vaccinated, they do it at their own peril. But if you're going to mandate from the federal government that everybody has to get vaccinated and you police that, are we two steps away from people snitching on each other? Are we two steps away from all of that information going to the federal government and being put on a registry? Because my tribe has a big problem historically with personal information going to the federal government. And that's going to be a really interesting privacy issue. I do not want to see my medical information, on some website, the way political donations are. Excuse me. I don't want to see medical, your most personal medical information be on some kind of database. I mean, that's some really dangerous stuff we're talking about.
No, that is for sure. So as of now, if you're under the new Biden policy, if you want to go to a baseball game or a football game, is there any requirement that you be vaccinated?
I don't know. Excuse me. I don't know, but I think that it's coming down to the stadiums and the teams requiring it, or it's going to be. And again, what if you forget your vaccination card? You're not allowed in the stadium at all? Are we on the honor system? What if you have a medical issue? He said that the executive branch all the workers in the executive branch of the federal government have to be vaccinated. Well, my understanding is that Congress is exempt from that.
We also saw ESPN reporter Allison Williams.
Yeah.
Said she's going to be stepping down for the college football season after she decided not to receive the vaccine. She posted a statement to Twitter saying that she decided not to get the vaccine while she and her husband are trying to conceive a second child.
Right.
It does seem like a shame that this woman is going to lose her job, essentially, because of this decision.
Right. And if you have an NFL team, let's say you own an NFL team or a Major League Baseball team, and you have a couple of employees who don't want to get vaccinated, but they're isolated. They work in the deep recesses of the stadium or the office building where you have the headquarters, and they're not bothering anybody. They're 50 feet away. Their offices are in a secluded area. Are you going to fire them? Or is the federal government going to mandate that you fire them? And what about the employers who are going to stand by? They have enough problems in this economy, in the COVID-19 economy, with making money, with getting good people. I mean, you see that all the time in the articles. People are having a tough time getting qualified workers. It's taking longer to get food at a restaurant. It's taking longer to get products and services because people either aren't showing up to work because they're scared of, you know, people who aren't vaccinated, or they just can't take the pressure. And look, we are all in this together, but to be scolded and to be mandated that that people who own companies with more than 100 workers get vaccinated, I just don't see how you're going to enforce that.
Well, and neither do I. What have we heard? By the way, if people are just tuning in, we're talking with David Krell. He's an author whose latest book is 1962, Baseball and America in the Time of JFK. What have we heard on the NFL front from players in terms of their willingness or unwillingness to be vaccinated?
Well, my understanding, Frank, is that they're pretty much above 90%, but you are seeing these stories pop up about a player getting COVID and he's being sidelined because of on the injured list, or I might have that phrase incorrectly, but they're being sidelined, they're being benched because of COVID-19 symptoms. And look, football is a contact sport. You're in close contact with the other players every play. You're in the locker room. So if a player doesn't want to be vaccinated, again, they're going to do it at their own peril. And the interesting thing is going to be, are players going to ostracize that non-vaccinated player? And it's just too early in the season to find that out.
Right. Well, especially now with a 17-game season.
Yeah.
Are we going to see this play out in the courts from now on, or are we just going to kind of leave this up to the league to self-police and see how they do this on their own?
Undoubtedly, there will be lawsuits either from a player or someone else who doesn't want to be vaccinated and claims a medical privacy issue. There will undoubtedly be lawsuits. I can't see how there wouldn't be. And teachers don't have to be vaccinated. There are exemptions for New York City teachers. So,
well, and as a caller pointed out earlier this morning, for postal workers as well.
Right. So how does this work? If you're going to have teachers telling students they have to be vaccinated, but they're not vaccinated.
Right. Right. No, I mean,
do as I say, not as I do. Is that the world that we're living in?
Yeah, it's a completely impractical. And New York, now that we are a week into them enforcing the restaurant requirement of vaccinations, I think a lot of restaurant owners and a lot of patrons are still trying to figure out how this is going to work as far as they go as well. So there's a lot of things to figure out, that's for sure.
And there's a psychology to this also, to use the bully pulpit and to come down on the owners of these companies instead of encouraging them. I just think is ineffective. It's just an ineffective way to conduct business. Instead of, you know, recruiting them, I don't see many public service announcements, if any, about the vaccine. I haven't seen any presidential press conference. Maybe there has been a conference in the past, we're in September, so in the past 8 months, maybe there has been one with Dr. Fauci and Dr. Walensky and some other notable medical personnel in the government and the president and the vice president. I'm not aware of one. And it's a little difficult to track because you see Dr. Walensky on one show. She's the head of the CDC. You see Dr. Fauci on another show. And sometimes I'm getting conflicting information. So I would like to see them all do one press conference and say, look, here's where we are. Here's where we think we're going. This might change, but here's what we recommend. And instead, what we got from Dr. Fauci was, well, you might want to wear a mask indoors. You don't have to wear a mask, but you should be indoors. If you're wearing a mask, you might want to do it. If you're with your children, because your children are in schools or they're on playgrounds. So there's a lot of might, and you should, and we don't know, and I, you, That's why everyone's looking at each other saying, well, what the hell are we doing?
Right.
What should we be doing? Do we have to wear a mask? Do we have to still stand 6 feet apart? Why not 8 feet? Why not 10 feet? Why not 12 feet?
And, you know, it's a fine thing if we want to have a debate about mandatory vaccinations for businesses or other people. But what I've brought up is I don't understand how governmentally the president can just do this on his own without any input from Congress whatsoever.
Well, he has an executive order power to do certain things, and until that's challenged in the courts, it will stand. And a president can, my understanding, it's been a long time since my days at Villanova Law School, but my understanding is that the president can rescind his own executive order. But I understand that he's trying to recruit people, but I don't see the soaring rhetoric of an Obama, a Clinton, a Reagan, a Kennedy. There's a lot of frustration. I can't imagine the frustration that's there. And the one thing that's interesting to me, Frank, I was talking about this with a couple of people over the weekend. I don't see the vice president anywhere. Why is she not taking a leadership role, or why isn't she allowed to take a leadership role? Why is it that part of the discussion? Because Vice President Pence was out there in front. Remember, he said 15 days to slow the spread and 30 days to slow the spread. I think this is a fantastic opportunity for Vice President Harris to have the chance to step up to the plate and also encourage, because she's a great speaker. She encourages people. When she had her rollout for the for her candidacy, I mean, she got tens of thousands of people. Mm. Why not utilize that asset? Why not do more public service announcements? Why not do more media instead of, you know, I signed an executive order, which I guess is okay. That's what you want to do in announcing something. But, I mean, we have media, social media, the internet, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, to encourage people beyond these crazy
right.
incentives like, you know, I'll give you a lollipop if you get a vaccine. I'll give you $100 if you get a vaccine. You can take a picture with the Lombardi Trophy if you get a vaccine. When we had the polio vaccine in the 40s and 50s, did people need an incentive?
It's very, very interesting to see how things have changed. I mean, you know, as a historian, though, that the tradition of ignoring your vice president is the more common strategy throughout American history. What Trump did with Pence, what Bush did with Cheney, that's a little bit historically at odds with what most presidents have done with their vice president.
Sometimes, but Nixon had an active role with
right.
Eisenhower. Johnson headed NASA under Kennedy, and we're talking about a severe crisis. And you can argue, and I went to the John Glenn Archives at Ohio State, and I went to the Kennedy Library in Boston to research for 1962, and there were a lot of opportunities that Lyndon Johnson had, in terms of the space program. And you can argue that that was a crisis. We were in a race with the Russians. We were in a terrific a crisis with, and I mean terrific in the terms of terrifying,
right.
In terms of the Cuban Missile Crisis. But Johnson had a lot of input, too. And who knows what's going on behind the scenes. I'm sure she has a lot of input behind the scenes. But I'd like to see more soaring rhetoric. I'd like to see more about the possibility of what the country could be and why we're all in this together, rather than, you know, someone basically metaphorically wagging their finger saying we're frustrated with you people.
Right. Right.
I felt like I was in second grade and the teacher saying you're talking too much in class.
There was you're right. There was certainly a scalding tone. David, we're going to have to end it there. I appreciate the time this morning, and I want to encourage everybody to check out your book, 1962, Baseball and America in the Time of JFK.